In a famous case, Sherlock Holmes seems to meet his demise. Yet the character survives, and for a detective 126 years old, he manages quite well, thank you, to this day, in part because of a quirk in copyright law. One scholar, though, wants to put an end to Holmes as a moneymaker for the Conan Doyle estate. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is Christopher Keneally, your host for Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series, Beyond the Book. And joining me, as he does every week, for a look at the news in publishing is Publishers Weekly senior writer Andrew Albanese. Andrew, welcome back.
Hey there, Chris.
Well, you know, we're going to get to Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson in just a moment. But in the first segment here, we want to take a look at augmented reality. And, you know, I have to tell you, we've just been chatting with Cory Doctorow for an upcoming segment here in Beyond the Book. You had a wonderful essay by Cory in a recent issue of PW. Augmented reality, that sounds like something he would be interested in.
Yeah, well, no doubt many of our listeners have probably heard the term augmented reality bandied about in our increasingly digital world, or maybe they've read it in a sci-fi book. But if they're like me, probably many have wondered what the heck augmented reality is. Well, it turns out that this term, augmented reality, is not just a concept from science fiction, but it's here now. And in Monday's issue, we take a look at a Dutch company that's doing it called Layar. That's L-A-Y-A-R. And Layar offers technology that can give publishers or advertisers or anyone really the ability to overlay all kinds of digital content over print publications and actually turn print into a somewhat interactive media. So what is Layar? Well, briefly, you know, it's a three-year-old Dutch company, and they've created this really easy-to-use technology where you can literally add digital content to pretty much anything that's flat, whether it's in the form of a video or an interview or animation or photos, excerpts, live links, buy buttons. You know, publishers can even turn a print catalog into an online store by adding live buy buttons or really whatever else they want, like an author interview. So it works like this. You know, think of QR codes, you know, those splotchy black and white icons that you have to place on a page. And I know that most designers hate those things because they got to find somewhere to put them. And then you click on those things with your cell phone, and it takes you to a page. Well, the Layar service is like that, but it doesn't use QR codes. Instead, you can use any kind of image you want. You know, you just take your smartphone or your tablet, you download the Layar app for Apple or Android, and that turns your device into a viewer. And content creators can, you know, they can use a free version, or they can use an upgraded Pro Layar Creator tool, and they can upload content, and suddenly, you know, your old media becomes new media. And you can read all about how it actually works in Monday's issue. Our Kelvin Reed has a great story on the company and on the technology, and you can even check it out in action if you are a PW print subscriber, as we are applying the Layar technology to our front cover, and we'll have a little bonus material.
Well, we'll look for that. And, you know, the future, we talk about it a lot here on Beyond the Book. And certainly last week at Tools of Change, we were excited about the future as Tim O'Reilly sees it. It's never boring, but the past itself has its moments of excitement as well. And I understand there are some interesting battles coming, including that lawsuit that I alluded to in the intro that gives a famous sleuth a special exemption in copyright law.
Ah, elementary. Yes, Mr. Keneally. This week we reported about a lawsuit filed by author and scholar Leslie Klinger that asked a federal court to declare that Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson and others of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's characters are actually firmly in the public domain. Now, as your readers probably know, copyright has indeed expired on most of the Sherlock Holmes stories. They're pretty old. There are more than 50 stories, I believe, that are now in the public domain. There are about another 10 that still, I think, remain under copyright protection for maybe another decade or so. But the problem, Leslie Klinger says, is that the Conan Doyle estate is basically attempting to strong-arm authors and publishers into licensing deals unnecessarily. And Klinger says they're intimidating publishers by threatening their distributors and so forth. So Klinger, who is also a lawyer, has stepped up and sued. And he's asking the court to declare that Sherlock Holmes, as a character, is actually in the public domain. So, you know, how is this all going to play out? I'm going to be following the story very closely. And readers can check back next week on the PW website for more. And after that, I'm sure, as I think this will probably be going on for a while. But I'll give you a glimpse of where things stand from my initial
initial reporting, and I've done a little more since our story ran this week. First, I do think Klinger is right. I believe his claim that there is more than enough to establish that Sherlock Holmes, the character, is in the public domain. You know, hey, it was a nice century-long run, but copyright ends, folks. And there's a pretty compelling case that The Sun has most likely set on Sherlock's copyright, at least in terms of him as a character. But can this lawsuit be successful? That's less clear to me. You know, for one, I think there's a pretty good chance that this case might get tossed. You know, notably, the Conan Doyle estate has not sued anyone for infringement, or at least not in this regard. And mostly, they've tried to just get people to enter license agreements that would sanction their products. And, you know, whether that's, you know, whether those, the Sherlock Holmes is under copyright or not, that's not illegal. You can still offer someone value in being an official Sherlock Holmes product, right? You know, something that's blessed by the Conan Doyle estate. And the attorneys I've spoken to wonder whether the court will see the estate's actions to get people to enter licensing agreements as anything more than a hard sell to become a sanctioned product. And since the estate and no one here is really alleging copyright infringement, you know, the basis for this copyright action, it's a little murky right now. But Klinger maintains that what he is seeking is perfectly within the court's scope, and I believe him. I think he's probably right, but we're still going to have to see how the court is going to view this. And finally, you know, this gives me a great chance to, you know, offer one last word on, you know, the public domain and copyright in general, as I so often love to do. You know, the public domain has been shrinking for some time now. We've seen works that have actually been taken out of the public domain in recent court rulings, and we've seen copyright extended to what many people would say are pretty absurd terms. So I do hope that this case serves as a chance to talk about the importance of having a vibrant public domain. And I'll also bring it up that I think it's kind of sad that Klinger has to actually sue the estate to make a clear and free use of characters that I think are pretty clearly, and I think a court will pretty clearly see, probably should be public domain. But as Lawrence Lessig once told me, copyright today is pretty much just the right to hire a lawyer. And for a lot of small and independent publishers and for authors, it has a chilling effect to think that they might wind up having to justify their work in court, because one lawsuit could wipe out their entire operation. And that, in turn, has a chilling effect on culture. But anyway, you can look for more on this case and the public domain and other copyright issues in the on the PW website in the coming days.
Well, indeed. And speaking of hiring more lawyers, the Big Six, fresh off settling with the Department of Justice, are sued again, this time over their ebook policies by independent booksellers. What do you make of all that?
Yeah, good. I did not see this one coming, I'll have to tell you. But, you know, as we reported this week as well, three independent bookstores have filed an antitrust class action suit against the Big Six houses and Amazon. Last time it was with Apple, now it's with Amazon. And they're charging that signing ebook agreements that call for the use of DRM sold through the Kindle is an unfair restriction on the sale of ebooks because the publishers have not entered into similar agreements with independent bricks and mortar stores or collectives to sell ebooks. You know, the complaint states that, you know, the vast majority of readers who wish to read an ebook published by the Big Six will probably purchase the book from Amazon. Now, how rich is that? Publishers are sued by the DOJ for a conspiracy to, you know, cut out Amazon, and now they're being sued by indie stores for conspiring with Amazon and using DRM. The bookstores have asked for an injunction that would prohibit publishers and Amazon from selling ebooks with device and app-specific DRMs. They would also require the Big Six publisher to allow independent bookstores to directly sell open-source DRM ebooks. I'll be as blunt as I can about this suit. I fully support the indie store's argument, but I don't really see much merit to the case, at least in my initial look at it. But that's not to say that the case can't achieve its true objective, which is to get publishers to offer DRM-free ebooks that can be used across many platforms and sold by many people. You know, after all, DRM is really kind of proven to be quite a headache for publishers, and it's not proving terribly effective at stopping piracy, and Amazon is using it to lock in its position, so why would the Big Six spend millions of dollars in legal fees fighting to defend that regime? And one final observation, you know, if this case does have some legs, I would look for where the library community is going to weigh in on this. Again, I'll be following this closely, and you can read more about this next week on the PW website.
Well, certainly that particular lawsuit has gained attention, and that may be just what the indie booksellers are looking for.
I think that's true.
And from a story about control to things that are out of our control, at least, and that's the weather. The Winter Institute is taking place in Kansas City at the end of this week, and a blizzard right now is shutting that city down. What's the latest from KC?
It's looking pretty rough from KC. So, yeah, the Winter Institute 8 conference, sponsored by the American Booksellers Association and CAMEX, which is the trade show of the National Association of College Stores, is underway. We're about to get underway, I should say, in Kansas City. And we have a number of reporters that are there already. And you can look for more coverage of that show on the PW website, too, in the coming days. But I'll say this, it's a good thing we got our people there early, because, as you say, a major snowstorm did hit, and a number of airlines have canceled flights. You know, organizers of the show at the time that we're talking right now are still pretty hopeful, and, you know, nothing's been canceled. No sessions have been canceled. Everything, the show is going on as normal for right now. But the situation is pretty fluid, and the weather is pretty bad. And because the show, you know, doesn't hold its opening ceremonies until Friday evening, there's a pretty good chance that booksellers who, you know, had to reschedule their flights are still going to find a way to get there. We'll see. You can check the PW website for any changes, and you can also check the ABA site, which is bookweb.org. But we hope they can ride it out. That's always a great show, and I hope people can get there for it.
And we want to end by reminding people about some special announcements on children's books.
Oh, yes. It's kids' time. Monday is our annual children's announcement issue with pages and pages of great forthcoming kids' books, as well as some great features and articles. It's always one of the most fun and most colorful issues of the year for us, and with two kids of my own, it's an issue that can help augment my reality.
And you can probably read them to sleep with the pages of PW.
God, I sure hope so.
You'll need that. Absolutely. Andrew Albany, Senior Writer for Publishers Weekly. Thanks, as always, for joining us on Beyond the Book.
Thank you, Chris.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. Follow us on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at the Copyright Clearance Center website, copyright.com. Just click on Beyond the Book. Our engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks, as always, for listening to Beyond the Book.